The book of Exodus really is the key book for the Jewish people. Freedom from slavery is the basic story of all the stories they tell. And the move from oppression to liberation continues to be a dominant biblical theme. And so in the midst of this basic story, Moses comes down from the mountain, and one thing he brings is this: remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you, your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your towns. Even animals have Sabbath. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, but rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it. I'm adding this text from the book of Mark. Jesus calls the disciples and sends them out. And they go to all, you know, spread the good news. They come back full of excitement. Oh, we've done this, we did this, we saw this, we saw that. And so the story of the return is in Mark 6, beginning with the 30th verse. The apostles gathered around Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. He said to them, "Come away to a deserted place all by yourselves and rest a while. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a deserted place by themselves." I wanted to say a word about a labyrinth. You know what a labyrinth is? People walk the labyrinth, you know, go walk in and then come back out again. Well, author Barbara Brown Taylor shares an experience with the labyrinth. She says, "Last year I walked the labyrinth for the first time in my life. I had flirted with labyrinths for years, but my expectations were so high that I kept finding reasons not to walk one. I did not want to be disappointed. I looked forward to walking a labyrinth so much that looking forward to it kept me from doing it. Then one day I met a woman who had a labyrinth on her land. Set in a small grove of pines, it was made of found stones with one as large as a pillow right near the entrance. When the wind blew, invisible chimes tinkled in the branches overhead. Beyond the trees, there was a small pond sparkling in the sun. I could walk the labyrinth whenever I wanted to. I didn't have to call first," my host said. "Well, with all excuses gone, I returned one late summer afternoon, said a short prayer, and entered the labyrinth. The first thing I noticed was that I resented following a set path. Where was the creativity in that? Second thing I noticed was how much I wanted to step over the stones when they did not take me directly to the center. Who had time for all those switchbacks? Third thing I noticed was that reaching the center was no big deal. The view from there was essentially the view from the beginning. I thought about calling it a day. But since I predictably follow the rules even when grousing about them, I turned around to find my way out of the labyrinth again. Since I'd already been to the center, I was not focused on getting there anymore. Instead, I breathed in as much of the pine smell as I could, sucking in the smell of sun and warm stones along with it. When I breathed out again, I noticed how soft the pine needles were beneath my feet. I saw the small mementos left by those who had preceded me on the path. I noticed how much more I noticed when I'm not preoccupied with the destination. When the path delivered me back to where I had begun, I lay down with my head on the stone pillow, and I dreamed Jacob's dream. Surely the Lord is in this place. And I did not know it. And the apostles gathered around Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, come away to a deserted place, all by yourselves, and rest a while. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a deserted place by themselves. Come away, come away. Now, over the years, you have heard me preach any number of sermons about Jesus' call to his followers to be engaged with the needs of the world. Indeed, to follow him into that engagement. The greatest among you is the one who serves. As you did it to the least of these, so you did it to me. Go and do likewise. Jesus never, ever backs away from a hurting and broken world and really refuses to allow us to back away as well. But today, we hear that very same Jesus inviting his disciples and us away from that engagement and into a time of rest. Come away. Come away. He's inviting them and us into Sabbath, a time of inactivity, reflection, and the good grace of doing absolutely nothing. Sabbath. Rabbi Abraham Heschel once said that the Sabbath is the only one of God's creations called holy. Everything else is called good. Only the Sabbath is holy. According to Heschel, Sabbath is the first and truest medium of God's presence in creation. Observing Sabbath has always kept God's people from being absorbed by the alien cultures where they resided. Even as slaves in Egypt, we read that God's people observe Sabbath. For 6 days of the week, they belong to Pharaoh. But on the Sabbath, they were free men and women who belonged only to God. The Sabbath was not a day simply for recovering their strength. It was freedom time. It was a time to recover their identity, time to remember who and whose they were. And there's so many forms of slavery. I'm showing my age here, but I can recall the Sundays in Mayberry on the Andy Griffith Show. You remember? Everyone would go to church, come home for Sunday dinner in the middle of the day, and then Andy and Aunt Bee, Opie, usually Barney, sit on the front porch all afternoon. Andy might strum on the guitar, they might sing a song, maybe make some ice cream, maybe Helen or Thelma Lou would drop by, or anyone else, actually, was welcome there on the porch. Just sitting there. Can you imagine that? Where's the email? Where did I put my cell phone? Let me check that Facebook one more time. Anyone seen my calendar anywhere? Always misplacing that calendar. How can people sit there on the front porch absolutely all afternoon and absolutely do nothing? Reflecting on Sabbath, UCC minister Donna Schapper writes, Sabbath Sabbath used to mean a specific day, Sunday, for Christians, Saturday for Jews. It was a day taken off from work for religion and rest. It was not a day for watching television. There goes the NFL, huh? With its dramatic replacement of our story with someone else's story. It was not a day for hiking. It was not a day to do errands or catch up on desk work or to pay bills. Work stopped, rest started. Oh, but our culture has not taken a Sabbath like that for a long time. Blue laws that kept stores closed on Sunday are long gone. Many people work weekends. Kids play soccer Saturday and Sunday. Errand and household chores and social obligations fill up the calendar. If the desk is going to get cleaned off, then Sunday may be the only time we have to do it. Because of the enormous changes in the way our work and play are structured, the meaning of Sabbath has all but disappeared. Time for spiritual rest is seen as a luxury. Indeed, in a world without Sabbath, all time seems the same time. It is as homogenized as milk. Time becomes a river in which we rush from place to place. Time is money, we say. And that's what it becomes in a world without Sabbath. And I don't know if this makes any sense to you. Does it ring true in your life? I mean, it does in mine. But with Jesus as a model, come away, come away. I want to argue that we need Sabbath. We need to reestablish it in our lives. Indeed, we need to insist on it. Because first of all, Sabbath changes time, or at least how we experience time. You might say Sabbath gives us back time, time that we so willingly give away. I think of Barbara Brown Taylor finally giving in to the rhythm of the labyrinth. She was able to enter into a different kind of time. A time for breathing, feeling pine needles beneath her feet, smelling sun and air, laying down on a stone pillow. It was a time when she did not do or produce a darn thing. And that is precisely the point of Sabbath. Story is told of Rabbi Zusa of Hanapol. One day he started to study a volume of the Talmud, which are sacred Jewish writings. A day later, his disciples noticed he was still dwelling on the first page. They assumed he must have encountered a difficult passage and was trying to solve it. But when a number of days passed and he was still immersed in the first page, they were astonished but did not dare to query the master. Finally, one of them gathered up the courage to ask him why he did not proceed to the next page. And the rabbi answered, "I feel so good here. Why should I go elsewhere?" Man, I never say that. I'm always thinking of the next page. Next place to go, the next task to do. By the time we sing the closing hymn, my mind is already wondering, now what am I going to say next Sunday? This year, really for one of the first times, my cell phone worked on Washington Island where I was last week, 5 miles off the coast or the point of Door County in Wisconsin, out in the middle of Green Bay on one side, Lake Michigan on the other. Cell phone worked. Well, after a couple days, I cracked under the pressure. Had to call the office, check in, what's happening? You know, couldn't stand any more rest and relaxation up there. But you see, Sabbath says, dare to stop for a moment, for a day. Stop trying to make everything happen. Let go of your obsessive doing. Don't check your messages. Sabbath restores our ownership of our own time, which again, we so easily give away. It restores, I think, our sense of the sacredness of time. Taking Sabbath time can lead us deeper into our life, the life we have right now, and out of our slavery to the very next thing. It puts, you might say, margins on the pages of our days. It reminds us that we're more than harried and hassled beasts of burden. After all, in the words of that noted theologian, Lily Tomlin, the trouble with the rat race is that even if you win, you're still a rat. And one other thing about Sabbath, a humbling thing, it reminds us that we are not God, that we are creatures and not the Creator. If I had been one of the disciples, I would have been absolutely shocked at Jesus' invitation to go away to a deserted place, away from the crowds. I mean, I'd have been tired after having spent all those days on the dusty roads of Palestine sharing the good news of the gospel. But I would have been excited, pumped up, ready for more. The people were responding. This was the time to strike. Huge crowds following Jesus. My gosh, let's baptize them. Let's turn them into church members. Heaven's sakes, give them a pledge card right now. But just at the moment when everything just seems to be exploding, everything seems to be working out, Jesus says, let's take a rest. You can't be serious. But you see, what he demonstrates for us, is that Sabbath is an act of trust, an act of faith. He takes the disciples away and for a while turns the world over to God. It's as if he's saying, yes, we must do the work of God that God has entrusted to us. We work and pray and do our best to be light and salt in the world. And then we take Sabbath, resting secure in the faith that for a while we can leave things in God's hands. Again, I don't know how that sounds to you. It's hard for me. I'm preaching to myself this morning. I thank you for listening as I go along here. I talk humility, but deep inside, I know that the universe, the church, will surely collapse if I release my tight grip on everything. Just one more call, that's all. But Sabbath says that sometimes we just got to let it go. For believe it or not, God is not dead, inactive, or ineffective. And it pains me to say this, but the last time I checked, God really hasn't turned the destiny of the world over to me or to any of us. So yes, we do justice. We work for peace. We care for the needy. We care for our families. We work responsibly. We remain extravagantly welcome. We bind up one another's burdens, share each other's wounds. But when we have done all we can do, we allow ourselves to loosen the reins of control, trusting in a grace, a love greater than us. I guess, you know, Sabbath tests our trust. Will the world fall apart? Will I fall apart if I stop making things happen for just a while? Can I trust this caring, this spirit will be the bottom line when I rest, when I relax my controlling reins? Or does everything really depend on my producing, asserting, and protecting my managing ego? So Sabbath is an invitation, an opportunity to pull out of the temptation to collapse ourselves and all meaning into a world of production and accomplishment. It's an opportunity to experience a way of being a way of being in which we trust God, the Holy One, to live within, before, and through us. Again, I think of Barbara Brown Taylor in that labyrinth, finally allowing herself to let go and simply be in the moment and discovering, surely the Lord is in this place.